Good afternoon, I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events Hour, Catholic Faith, 50 minutes of the afternoon. Pope Francis closing the Year of Mercy and installing new cardinals, talking about the polarization, not just our country, but the fact that we are so divided as people when it comes to opinions, when it comes to politics, when it comes to building walls, as he talks about. And I think a lot of this focused on American politics, undoubtedly. So we're going to get into a discussion of that this afternoon. Also, some video footage that I posted from Al Jazeera showing a horrible situation that seems to be rampant now with this anti-Muslim sentiment and just an excuse now to say, well, Trump's president, you won't be here long, so we just count on you being gone. Horrible. We'll talk about that. And that leads me into immigration and abortion. What does true pro-life movements look like? How do we do this effectively with credibility? A big question. Also a little bit about prudential judgment and what that really means. And then all of this getting discussed on Mark Shea's blog, or on his Facebook page, I should say, because he posted my question there and then it got crazy. We'll talk about all of that and more this afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this. Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Hour, Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Year of Mercy closing, now with this end of the liturgical year, and a new liturgical year beginning with Advent. Pope Francis installing new cardinals, and with some interesting things to say, and all of the news is, all of the major news outlets are covering this with his comments about polarization. And it's easy to, and I know that there are those who look at Pope Francis and say, how dare he talk politics? Well, first off, he's not talking politics when he says, we got a problem with polarization. Yes, politics polarizes. There's no question about it. And he has been very outspoken from the beginning when it comes to those divisive issues. Why lead with those? Why begin with there? Why start there? There's, you know, Matthew Kelly talks about this, these levels of intimacy, I think is what, the seven levels of intimacy. He talks about, you know, going from this nicety to this point of expressing opinion. And then when you express opinion, well, my goodness, right? That's when either things get incredibly intimate or they dissolve, because we decide based on someone's opinion whether or not we're going to develop a deeper relationship with them, because we may not value their opinions. Therefore, that opinion is not valid. If that opinion is not valid, we want oftentimes nothing to do with people, and therefore the polarization occurs. The tough stuff is when someone has an opinion with which you disagree, but you're still willing to engage in intimacy and a development of a relationship with this individual to the point of really knowing who they are and what they're all about. That's tough. It's tough to get beyond that, because it requires us suspending a little bit of our normal nature, if you will, to that aversion of somebody expressing something we dislike, to enter into it a deeper connection now. That's tough, but that's what this requires, right? This is what Jesus says, love your enemies. Well, how do you do that? You know, you love them by entering more deeply and understanding more than what you could have by simply saying, well, I don't believe what this person believes. I don't support what they believe. Therefore, I don't have to associate with them. And that's antithetical to this understanding of we need to engage. We have to engage. We have to be a part of this culture in a way that really can be that leaven, right? That can allow this bread to rise. We can be that salt and that light. These are There's just many illustrations scripturally that talk about this requirement for us to be an active ingredient. And if we simply isolate ourselves, if we ultimately wall ourselves away, if we silo to the point that we can't see out, no one can see in, we've defeated the mission before there's even an opportunity to enact that mission. And this is what our Holy Father is saying. It's so vitally important to be a bridge builder and to look at even those we disagree, even those with whom we disagree, as real opportunities of intimate connection and exploring that all the more of that connectedness into what might not be where we thought we'd go, might not be where we necessarily want to go, but is there a way to learn from each other, to journey together, and to move through these understandings in a way that we're going to come out sharing our strengths? We don't do that. We don't do it well at all. And I think the political machinery is part of the problem. I've thought that for a long time. I'm an independent. I talk about this frequently. I do not believe that personally, and this is me, and I'm not saying it has to be for everyone, but personally for me as a Catholic, I don't believe that I can fit into either party's politics effectively. There's going to be something I disagree with enough to not be a part of that. And so that kind of puts me in a unique position. I'm both trusted and distrusted by both sides, depending on what opinion I express at that particular time, right? Let me express an opinion and then, whoa, where is this going? So unfortunately, this is what we deal with. We get to this point of separation simply from the standpoint of ideas that could really be unifying ultimately if we get beyond what is surface, because I think that's where it breaks down. We get to that point and we don't go deeper. We don't allow ourselves to enter into true relationship, true engagement, and respectful dialogue, to simply say, well, let's look at this, let's explore this. I seem to disagree with you, but maybe I don't understand enough. Have we ever said that? Do we have those kind of conversations where we're willing to say, yeah, let me understand that more, because I'm not sure I get it. I'm not sure I really am hearing this well, or I'm not really seeing this effectively. Maybe if we were to explore this together with a little bit more depth, we would understand. We don't do that. So, yeah, it looks to some like Pope Francis is playing politics. I know that that makes people crazy. I know that there are those who say, how dare he enter into this or criticize, especially, there were those in the election who thought there was a problem with this. First off, Trump got elected regardless, right? So Pope Francis didn't do anything to influence that. So you don't have that to worry about. And Pope Francis is concerned about human dignity. He embodies the understanding of what real pro-life Catholicism looks like, right? That's what he's doing. He's saying we have to be together on these issues because that's where we find strength. That's where we find the momentum to move, right? If you look at these analogies, what is the kingdom of heaven and the kingdom is here on earth? Well, it's having this mustard seed of faith, this very small amount of faith, which is essentially representative of one individual that then blossoms into this big bush, this big tree, whatever it is the mustard seed grows into. It's because of this collectiveness of all of us working together. That analogy, that's analogous to that, right? That allegorical understanding. Not that that's what heaven is, but the kingdom that is now. What does it look like? It means us, individuals with small faith, coming together to say, okay, now what do we do? How do we affect this? How do we move this? How do we do something that looks like nothing that's ever been done before? But if all we're doing is infighting, if all we're doing is disagreeing, if all we're doing is trying to stand our ground and try to defend our position because it's politically expedient, well, we've defeated ourselves before we can even get going on this. And that's what Pope Francis is seeing. the division, the polarization, the fact that I know Democrats who think all Republicans are evil. I know Republicans who think all Democrats are evil. That's crazy. We can't do that. We can't simply label someone in this broad brush of painting of one political group, especially to the point of declaring them evil. We can't do that. Again, I've stepped outside. I've stepped beyond those political labels because I knew I didn't fit. Maybe that's something to consider. Maybe more of us need to do that. Maybe more of us need to seek a third way of looking at things rather than it just being so left, right, black, white. It's never that. It's never that. And we talk about the gray, we talk about getting into this murky water, and that scares people. Because we want black and white. We want definition. We want things to be very clear. Well, clarity only comes through the illumination that's given to us for our next step. Like that's what Jesus does. He's there to shine the light for the next step if we follow him. Yeah, we can have a big vision, but even that, we don't know what it is. We don't know what it is. We just know that we're going to keep our eyes fixed. We're not going to look back. We're going to keep looking ahead. But we don't know what that looks like. All we can do is trust with every step we take that we're walking in grace because we are doing everything we can to heed the will of God, to hear, trust, and follow God's will. If we do that, if we're capable of doing that, now we have the opportunity to at least be on the right path. Anything else? Anything less? We're meandering. We're not there. So if we're actually going to truly, and as I say this, I'm cautiously choosing what I say because I don't want to say that you can't be Republican or Democrat. But I think if you discern that God's will is not in the politics, really, ultimately, because it's only caused division, or it's caused you to hate someone, or to assume that an entire group of individuals are evil, which I know there are those who think that way, if that's where you are, maybe it's time to reconsider. Maybe it's better for you, because that's what it is. It's better for me. Better for me to step outside. That way I'm not going to be in that judgmental place of assuming someone else is up to no good. No, I can step outside that, see a bigger picture, and begin to discern this in ways that I normally wouldn't be able to because it was too close. So it's tough. It's tough to kind of have that degree of self-examination to really ask those questions of yourself and try to figure things out. It's not at all easy. And I'm not exactly good at it, but I'm trying. Back with more in just a moment. I want to talk about this anti-Muslim sentiment that seems to be on a rise, and certainly video evidence of that out there. More to come in just a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. 50 minutes every afternoon. Videos on Facebook and social media depicting these incidents of anti-Muslim sentiment. Posted one of these over on my Facebook page from the Al Jazeera network, which is undoubtedly Muslim-friendly. And you could say, well, they're just picking out the bad stuff and displaying that. Well, the fact that the bad stuff is there in the first place is bad, right? We shouldn't have to overanalyze that or dissect that or defend the fact that these are isolated cases, right? I mean, cases are cases, regardless of how isolated, and we need to try to do everything we can to keep things of that nature from happening. Because here's what I want us to understand. It's one thing to sit back and say, well, Muslim this, Muslim that, terrorist this, terrorist that. But there have been times, you don't have to dig too far back in history to look at the way Catholics were looked at. Look at the way Catholics were looked at in post-Reformation England. We were undoubtedly in a category that was even more dubious than that of Muslims. Right? Because we had the Guy Fawkes incident, we had a king who was completely on a tirade against the church, and anyone who defended the faith authentically would be put to death. We know we have saints who came from this experience, St. Thomas More, St. John Fisher, to name a couple. I mean, this is what can happen, right? This is what can happen when religious liberty is devalued anywhere. So, I mean, you know, realize religious liberty is exactly that. It's not liberty to protect a religion. I mean, this is the brilliance of our forefathers who said, we need to make sure that there is no state-sanctioned and sponsored religion so we don't end up looking like England again. We need to make sure that that expression of liberty of religion is protected in every way imaginable. So we don't end up with this very narrow view of, well, it is only this and that's it. Because when Muslims' religious liberty is threatened, what's next? And we say crazy things like, well, we don't want this secular state, and we don't want God to be removed from every element of public life. Okay, we'll protect that by protecting someone else's religious liberty. Allow them to have their freedoms, and we will have ours. When we begin to infringe upon theirs, where does that stop, right? Where do we decide, well, okay, well, it's this religion is the way we do it, and nobody else. This is it. I mean, we get to the point of so intense and so blinded that we do crazy things. Now, hear me out on this, because I think that we've seen a recent example that displays this trajectory of blindness very clearly. And that is what happened with Father Frank Pavone. He brings out an aborted fetus, places this dead child on an altar, and immediately does two things that are never to be done. One is a very inappropriate treatment of the deceased, which certainly defies dignity of this individual, this human being, this person, this baby, this fetus that is placed in this naked on an altar. That's undignified. Undignified. And then look at what the altar is used for. It's desecration for that. So when we get this trajectory down that we're like, okay, we're going to do anything. I was very critical. I'll remain critical, even though Dalyden was apparently acquitted of anything that he was charged with, and he had a great legal team, I know, working for him. But you don't say the ends justify the means, therefore we're going to go into the abortion business pretending we're somebody we're not, secretly tape people and try to frame them. You don't do that. There's always enough rope. If something is legitimately illegitimate, if something is truly not on the up and up, there's always enough rope for someone to hang themselves with. You don't have to go in and try to create more. Just look at what's there. That's all it takes. That's all you have to do. You don't have to take this extreme trajectory to the point that you're ultimately going to end up doing something that is in defiance of what you began to stand for. So think about this. As we think that we're protecting our liberty by restricting someone else's, where does that end? We've heard these stories of history about, well, they came for the Jews, and I wasn't a Jew, so I didn't do anything, right? And we know this. And oh, is it Viktor Frankl who is attributed with that, if I'm not mistaken? But this is dangerous. I think we have to see that. If we're willing to say certain people don't need to be practicing their religion, that doesn't stop. That train doesn't stop. Because we set everything we do, we set precedent. Yeah, I saw this on Facebook the other day. Crazy comment apparently from someone in Trump's organization talking about there has been precedent for this because of the internment camps of Japanese during World War II. Okay. So because we did something egregious 60 years ago, we're going to do it again? We need to do it again. Yeah, it was egregious then, and therefore we need to do it again. I mean, you see the danger we step into when we start placing a precedent that we could build upon? Let's never enter into that. Let's not start there. Let's not have this opportunity for precedent that says now we go even further off track. Now we're capable of doing even more that's egregious. That's self-defeating. And that's something that we really have to think about when we look at ultimately what are we trying to do? What are we trying to accomplish? Liberty is good. Liberty is beautiful. Liberty is something to stand for everyone. If we truly believe that liberty and justice for all means that, if we really believe that all, then we're not going to come out with something crazy to say we need to restrict these individuals from doing what they believe in, which is their faith, which for many of us, we would say is the absolute most important element of anything that we do at any given time. So why would we do anything to restrict that for someone else, even if we don't believe what they believe? So I would hope that we look at these opportunities as a place of examining our own conscience. And I would hope that if we encounter something of this nature, we do something to say, wait a minute, what do you want to be treated that way? Do you want your faith to be completely disregarded in a way that allows this horrific prejudice? Because whether you understand this or not, the Catechism is pretty clear when it comes to the three religions that all have roots from the same father, and that father being Abraham, and those religions being the Christian faith, the Jewish faith, and the Muslim faith. And we need to find ways of affirming each other more in both creed and practice, and a way to work together through this. Because that's how we will make a difference. That's how things can be. If we really want to see change, if we really want to see opportunities, that's how it will happen. It'll happen because we're willing, because we were willing to work together in ways that really can change that trajectory. But when we start just getting more and more and more constrained and blinded, we end up doing things that ruin our credibility, because there's now we're in this world of extreme restrictiveness. So I think as people of faith, we need to be people of faith, which says we're people of our faith, yes, first and foremost, absolutely, as we practice our faith. But when it comes to what we do with others, for others, we got to see what that looks like. It's what I've said before, right? Us and Christ, we're the bride. In that relationship, we're the bride. In any other relationship, we're the priest, prophet, and king, which means we're the spouse, the bridegroom, that we're the altar Christ. We're the other Christ to the world, which that means we defend those who are defenseless. That means we come to the aid of those in need. That means we absorb the pain of those suffering pain, and we do everything we can in this dual role, which is it's interesting and exciting all at the same time, right? Because in that time of prayer, in that time of preparation, certainly in that time of Eucharistic relationship, it's we're the bride, we're all receptive, nothing but receptivity. But it's only in that relationship where we're receptive in that nature. Everything else, we take the role of Christ to go out and absorb. It's a beautiful opportunity if we see it and take it. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Almost Hour, back after this. We're back. I'm Leo Brown, Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Hour, Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Interesting piece on Facebook I saw earlier from an examination of the right-wing media. And of course, you know, the conservative media always wants to blame the liberal media for everything. And there's an interesting look at how this is really a danger of exclaiming things that simply aren't true, to the point that we're now convinced that there's a collective paranoia, that our government can't be trusted, that everyone, again, it's back to this, what we were talking earlier about Pope Francis and this polarization. It's really shameful that that's where we are. And we're to the point now where I think that the only way to have credibility, the only way to really have credibility, is for people of faith to embrace our faith, embrace it fully, to the point where we really stand for something consistent and not something that is isolated. I asked this question, Mark Shea reposted it, we got all kinds of interesting response, but the question is basically, if we are people of life and we think that there should be 40 million more people in this country because they were victims of abortion, but yet at the same time we agree with the quote-unquote prudential judgment of not allowing 10 million immigrants, not refugees, immigrants who are here illegally to remain here in some fashion of fast-tracking their citizenship, then my question is, what is the difference? Because we would be okay, again, with 40 million more. So is it because you think we don't have resources? Is it because you don't think that there's enough to go around? Is it because you think that there would be such a strain on the system of these individuals coming in that they're causing some sort of economic imbalance? Then if that's the case with the 10 million, what would happen with the 40 million? So I think we're going to examine what it is we're saying and be consistent here. Because if we don't think 10 million belong, but we think that 40 million belong, then there's only one thing. There's only one thing that separates them. And that one thing is their nationality, which makes us, I'm sorry, xenophobic. It makes us xenophobic. Because if we're saying, well, if they were born here, 40 million, have 100 million born here, but 10 million coming to Christ. See, this is why we're inconsistent. So if we are people of life, and we need to be, yes, we need to understand what that life really looks like. That life looks like not just babies in the womb. Yes, preeminent, we've talked about this a lot. Without life, we've got nothing else. Absolutely, but it does not end there. It's not the be-all, end-all. Because we have to have a consistent ethic of life that says we are pro-life because we support human dignity. Now, I would challenge anyone who has the label of pro-lifer to tell me why. Just tell me why. And if you say, because we believe in human dignity, Leo, because we have an incarnational reality as people of faith, we know that Christ became man, embodied our existence, so we could become like him. And that incarnational reality, the very inherent dignity that is true of all humanity because we're all children of God, that has to be protected for us all. Because we're serving Christ in each other. We start in the womb and we continue throughout the entire continuum of life. If that's what you tell me, if that's the answer I get, then you know what? I'm going to be satisfied. And I'm going to say, well, let's work on this together then. Let us lock arms. Let us come together in an understanding that says, absolutely, this is it. But anything less, then I'm not sure we really understand why we're doing what we're doing. And this is what I've said a zillion times. Please, let's get the why behind the what. Let's understand that. Let's figure that out. Let's try to have a solid degree of consistency so people can look at us and go, you know what? They got their act together. Even if I don't agree with them, I would much rather have somebody disagree but still see why we do what we're doing as opposed to totally disagree and even question our very ethic. So let's look at the consistency. Let's work toward the consistency. Let's find ways to build this to the point that says, you know what, those Catholic people, wow, I may not agree with them, but man, they got their act together. At least I know why they believe that. But here's what I think. I think if we truly do that, it's going to be hard to disagree with it, unless it just threatens you inherently for some, because you got something invested in something that you potentially could lose, which is why Jesus was crucified, because he appeared to be speaking a language that was beginning to resonate with many, that they were fearing a revolution. They were fearing an uprising. And because of that fear and because of that, what now was no longer just an interesting sort of philosophy of thought, but now was becoming a movement. It was becoming something that was now becoming cohesive, and there was actual a threat to the leadership as it was, because this was now beginning to become unsustainable. And who is this guy? You know, and that's the irony of the crucifixion, right? Because here's Jesus. The irony of the trial leading to the crucifixion. Here's Jesus, who's just trying to show us how to love one another. Just trying to show us how to effectively, really, truly embrace this understanding. Embody, truly embody, incarnationally, this understanding. And he's seen as a revolutionary. And then, who do they put on the judgment seat with him to say, which one of these do you want? And they release the revolutionary, Barabbas, who really was trying to lead an uprising, an anti-government uprising. It's amazing when you look at just how deep that kind of, just look at it, you could examine that one for days, write dissertations and doctoral theses on that. I mean, it's, but that's where we are, right? That's where we are. We would rather have a revolutionary than to have somebody who is simply trying to love each other, simply trying to show us how to love each other. Today, even, we would reject Jesus for a revolutionary, for someone who promises change, for someone who promises an uprooting. And I don't think that that's lending itself to anything productive for us as people of faith or people of life. And I know that there's a tribe developing. I know that there's a group that says, hey, you know what? We want to see things different. We want to see things working differently. We want to look at a new way of seeing this in a way that says, wait a minute, let's really, really think about this consistency and this ethic and look at ways to enact reasonable legislation or at least attitudes, public attitudes, to say, you know what, we value these people because of their human dignity. You know, the one thing that keeps coming up, well, there's economic impact of these immigrants. Yeah, there is. Absolutely. And it would be detrimental to our culture if we did say 10 million people need to go because they're working jobs. But that's not what it's about. It's not about their utilitarian or contribution physically. It's because they're human beings. And see, I mean, we can get even tied up in this own craziness of assuming that it's there's some utilitarian function, and I've heard that, and I've heard that even from left-leaning individuals who try to make this argument for the need for expanded immigration and quicker paths to citizenship for those who are here because how it's tied. But that has nothing to do with grace. That has nothing to do with human dignity. That's still political. It's still simply boiling it down to what's in it for you. The tough stuff is when we look at others and we say, what's in it for them? What's in this for them? And if that's how we begin making decisions, if we start saying, hey, I'm going to try to make a decision where you win. I'm going to try to make a decision for you to win. I'm going to try to make a decision for you to win. Now we got something that is crazy, for one. Nobody does that. And we have amazing credibility because of what we're doing with that opportunity. Now, I happen to know, like I say, I've read more than my share of Trump books, and he's not a win-winner. He is a win-loser. He wants to win, and he wants to create opportunities for winners to win, while at the same time allowing others to lose. Now, I want him to succeed. And I even said I'm not going to be critical of his presidency. And by me saying this, I'm simply referring to what I know from what I've read. But I want him to succeed. And yes, you know, people have said maybe Trump can have a conversion. That's a conversion I hope that he has, that it becomes a win-win really for everyone, to where we're looking at the dignity of each individual and say, how do we help you succeed? That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless you.